console when I got to the bridge. Amar Jagal in the command chair. She started to get up, but I waved her back. You have the con, Amar Jagal, I said as I took the chair beside her. You can handle this much better than I could. If my words pleased her, once the computer translated them, she gave no indication. Nodan said to me, Sir, the captain of Truax is sending many questions. Some of them are addressed to you personally, sir. I hesitated, then replied, Tell Truax we'll talk with them after we establish orbit. For now, I want only the medical channel to remain open. Yes, sir, said Nodan. So I belted myself into the chair beside Amar Jagal as Lucifer angled steeply into the last layer of clouds between us and the relative safety of space. It's strange, I thought. I had always considered space to be a dangerous environment, a vacuum drenched with hard radiation and peppered with meteoroids that could puncture a ship's hull like high-powered bullets. But after our stay on Venus, the cold, empty calm of space looked like heaven itself to me. The topmost cloud deck is the thickest of Venus's three, and we seemed to be approaching it at a crawl. I watched the main screen's display of our planned ascent trajectory, a long curving line through an expanse of gray that represented the clouds. The blinking cursor that marked our position seemed to barely move toward the underside of the cloud deck. The bugs were going to have plenty of time to gnaw on our hull. I remembered what they did to Bahadur and his cohorts in the escape pod. There had to be something more that we could do to get through the clouds. Thoughts whirled through my mind, flashing like kaleidoscope images. Bahadur, the escape pod, our rocket engines, the acceleration that rocket thrust produces. On impulse, I popped the tiny display screen up from the arm of my chair and called up the rocket propulsion program. How much extra rocket propellant were we carrying? Could we use the rockets to push us through the clouds and still have enough left to establish orbit once we were clear of the cloud deck? No, I saw. The margins were too thin. It would be too much of a risk. Approaching dayside, the navigation technician called out in English. Amar Jagal nodded wordlessly. Then she turned to me. We will face the super-rotation winds again, she warned. Understood, I said, imitating the clipped professional talk of the crew. I turned my attention back to the display screen and called up alternative trajectories. Maybe... No, nothing. All the programs had us lighting up the rockets only after we had cleared the bug-laden cloud deck. On a hunch, I checked the rocket engine specs. They could run for 5 times longer than the brief burst Fuchs had programmed. I asked the computer to show a trajectory that minimized thrust and maximized burn time. Once the numbers appeared on my screen, I asked for a correlation with our ascent trajectory. Yes. If we lit the rockets now as we entered the clouds, they would push us through the cloud deck in 12 minutes and still produce enough thrust to establish us in orbit. Barely. To me, getting through those waiting bugs in 12 minutes was infinitely better than spending 12 hours in the clouds. Amar Jagal, I called to her. Look at this. And I put the new trajectory on her main screen. She frowned at the display, brows knitted, the corners of her mouth turned down. But she grasped what I was showing her. That I could clearly see. After a few moments, she turned to me and said, It does not leave us any reserve for orbital maneuvering. Oh, I said, feeling crushed. We'd have to be able to maneuver once we got into orbit to make rendezvous with the rocket engines that would take us back to Earth. Amar Jagal's frown softened. The nuclear module has maneuvering jets. I blinked at her. We could get it to maneuver to us? She nodded. If necessary. Then let's do it, I said. This is not the trajectory your father planned, she pointed out. I know, I said. But I'm in charge now. For a long moment she said nothing, merely staring at me with those expressionless dark eyes. Then she nodded and said the best 2 words I'd ever heard. Yes, sir. We were already in the clouds before she finished making the changes to the guidance and propulsion programs. I imagined I could hear the bugs chewing on our hull. Amar Jagal spoke into her lip mic in her own language, and the computer's flat voice boomed through the ship. Prepare for 2G thrust in 1 minute. I gripped the armrests of my chair, expecting to be flattened into it as we lit off the rockets, but it wasn't anywhere near as dramatic as I'd envisioned. The ship shuddered, trembled under the sudden acceleration, but except for the muffled roar of power, lighting off our rocket's engines was something of an anticlimax. Until I glanced over at the screen that showed our progress. We were sailing through the clouds beautifully, that cursor rising through the gray region like a rocket-propelled cork popping up to the surface of the sea. I grinned at Amar Jagal, and she actually smiled at me. At last the cursor showed that we had cleared the cloud deck. No alarms ringing. The trajectory plot showed we were on course for rendezvous with the rocket pack. We had made it through the bug-infested clouds. I exhaled a huge sigh of relief. "I'd like to see the forward view," I said to Amar Jagal. She nodded her understanding and said a brief word to Nodon. The main screen showed the dark expanse of infinity, speckled with stars. I smiled gratefully. "Rear view, please," I said. Now I could see Venus again, those swirling cloud tops brilliant with sunlight. "We're safe," I said silently to the goddess. "We've come through the worst you can throw at us." That's when the super-rotation wind gripped us. The ship lurched like a prizefighter who'd just taken a punch to the jaw. But I laughed aloud. "Go ahead," I said to Venus. "Blow us a farewell kiss." Beyond Death. I stayed on the bridge while Amar Jagal fought through the super-rotation winds, the ship bucking and shuddering like a thing alive. I could see on the trajectory display that we were being pushed off course, but there was nothing we could do about it except hope that once we reached orbit, the nuke module waiting to propel us back to Earth would be close enough to make rendezvous with us. The fact that we were accelerating at 2 G's rather than passively floating like a dirigible actually helped. Lucifer climbed past the super-rotation winds in record time. The buffeting died away, but the ship still rattled under the thrust of her rockets. All of a sudden, the engines cut off. One instant, we were shaking like a racing car on a rough track with the muted rumble of the rockets in our ears. Half an eye blink later, the noise had snapped off, and everything was as smooth as polished glass. We were in orbit, in zero gravity. My arms floated up off the chair rests, and my stomach crawled up into my throat. Amar Jagal was speaking to the technicians on the bridge in their own language. It was crucial that we make rendezvous with the nuclear module, otherwise we'd be stuck in Venus orbit. But there was something even more important for me to do. Unstrapping from my chair, I flung myself toward the hatch. I had to find a lavatory now, or throw up all over the bridge. The nearest toilet was in Fuchs's quarters. Even in my state of misery, I hesitated a moment before barging in. But only a moment. I was really ill, and I knew he was down in the sickbay with Marguerite. I spent a miserable half hour vomiting into the plastic bowl. Every time I thought I was finished, it took only a slight movement of my head to bring on the nausea all over again. But then I heard the intercom report, "Rendezvous established, beginning spin up to 1G. I staggered over to Fuchs's bed, and almost instantly fell asleep. When I awoke, everything seemed normal. All my internal organs were in their proper places, and I could turn my head without the world swimming about me. I sat up cautiously. I lifted one of the captain's pillows and let it drop to the floor. It fell normally. I laughed. Amar Jagal must have successfully rendezvoused with the nuclear module, and now we were spinning at the end of the connecting tether, creating an artificial gravity inside Lucifer. Artificial or not, it felt wonderful. I got out of bed and went down to the crew's quarters, where I showered and dressed in fresh coveralls. Feeling rested and relaxed, knowing that we would soon be getting my medical supplies from Truax and then heading back to Earth, I strolled down to the sickbay. One look at Marguerite's face erased the smile from my face.
"He's dead," she told me.
Fuchs lay on the narrow table, his eyes closed, his face gray and lifeless. The monitors were silent, their screens dark. "When?" I asked. "How long ago?" She glanced at the digital clock.
5, 6 minutes. I just finished disconnecting the monitors."
I stared down at his lifeless body. My true father. I had barely had the chance to know him, and now he was gone.
"If we'd been on Earth,"
Marguerite said, her voice full of self-reproach.